I was a practicing clinician working in a home health agency model. I wasn't allowed to dose my patients as per best practice guidelines. So I said, there's gotta be a way to do this better.
My grandmother and my grandfather, I started seeing them going in and out of long-term care. It started personal, seeing the sick side of 80, and now it's been exciting to be part of Fox.
Light bulb moment.
Like, that's a complete game changer.
You can see what we can do as a practice and as treating clinicians to really make 80, 85 look so much different than it did back that long ago.
And boil it down into one saying, it's quite simply this. It's be stronger, live better longer.
Welcome to Fox Rehabilitation's Live Better Longer podcast, the podcast dedicated to clinicians who work with older adults. My name is Jim Scheer, and today on the podcast, I will be joined by neuroradiologist, professor and chair of diagnostic imaging at Brown University, director of Neurovascular Center at Rhode Island Hospital, and president of the Society of Neurointerventional Surgery, Dr. Mahesh Jayaraman. Why, you may ask? How did I land this interview? Well, if you didn't know, May is Stroke Awareness Month, and this week is actually Survive Stroke Week. So there's a public education and advocacy campaign called Get Ahead of Stroke, and their goal is to educate the public on what to do if someone you know or yourself shows symptoms of a stroke. You know, if you have a loss of balance, if your eyesight gets blurry, your face starts drooping, you feel your arm getting weak, if you start speaking differently, those are all signs of stroke. And if you are experiencing one of those signs, you have to call 911 immediately, because every second you lose is crucial. And you may remember last year on the Live Better Longer podcast, we were speaking with neurosurgeon Dr. Jay Mocco, and he said, yes, call 911 because immediately the hospital will prep and get ready. He's like, never drive to the emergency room. He's like, because that's going to make everything longer. As soon as you call 911, that's when the healthcare professionals jump into action. So it's all about acting quickly. And if you listen to last year's podcast, I asked Dr. Mocco, can you prevent a stroke? He said, well, the best way to prevent it is good health and nutrition. Smoking increases your chances of getting a stroke. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, that increases your chances of getting a stroke. So the best way to prevent it is to stay healthy. And you don't need to be getting the facts from me, because we will be speaking with a true professional today. But I will give you some bullet points before we bring in Dr. Jayaraman. Strokes are the fifth leading cause of death in America, and it is the leading cause of adult disability. The theme for Stroke Awareness Month this year is Arrive, Survive, and Thrive. And it's all about noticing those symptoms and acting as quickly as possible. You see someone with the droopy mouth or their arm gets weak, call 911 right away. Because like it says in the tagline, arrive, survive, thrive, the quicker you act, the better your chances of thriving afterwards. So in mere moments, I will be speaking with Dr. Mahesh Jayaraman. And he's doing interviews junket style today because he has been so gracious to dedicate an entire day to do interviews in honor of Stroke Awareness Month. So I don't know where we are on his list. I hope he's not interviewed out by the time he gets on the Live Better Longer podcast. Or he may be in a groove. He may have done 3 or 4 interviews and he's just rolling. So we'll find all of that out when Dr. Jayaraman joins us. But before that happens, 2 pieces of information for you. Actually, both of these events happening next Thursday, May 9th. Like I told you last week, we have another edition of Fox Rehabilitation's Game Day. That is happening next Thursday, May 9th, 10:30 a.m. East. We encourage all of our patients and our senior living community partners to join us on Facebook Live, where myself and Dr. Megan Henninger host a little trivia event. So if you can join us live, great. If not, the video will live on Facebook. So if you would like to RSVP to Fox Rehabilitation's Game Day, go to Fox Rehabilitation's Facebook page, go under the events tab and say, yes, I'll go to Game Day on May 9th, 10:30 a.m. East. And then also happening on Thursday, May 9th, it will be the premiere of our webinar, Conquer Student Loan Debt, with PT and certified student loan consultant, Dr. Connor Pierce. So I know we're in graduation season. All of those clinicians are getting out of school and they have to start thinking about those student loans. So on Thursday, May 9th, we got that webinar with Dr. Connor Pierce, and he will drop some knowledge. He will tell you the best way to pay off those student loans. So if you would like to sign up for that webinar, it's as easy as going to Fox Rehabilitation's website, foxrehab.org. And it's right there on the landing page. You can click on Dr. Pierce's picture and then join us for Conquer Student Loan Debt, premiering Thursday, May 9th, 3 p.m. East. And fear not, if that time does not work out for you, you can always watch the webinar by going to our website, foxrehab.org. We are back on Fox Rehabilitation's Live Better Longer podcast. And as promised, I am joined by Dr. Mahesh Jayaraman. And let me go through your credentials, your resume here. And if I miss anything, just add it.
All right.
Neuroradiologist. Professor and Chair of Diagnostic Imaging at Brown University, Director of Neurovascular Center at Rhode Island Hospital, President of the Society of Neurointerventional Surgery. Did I get it all?
You got it.
All right.
You got it.
Because I was looking you up online and I felt like that I was missing a couple, but if I got the big ones, then we're all good.
You're good. You're good.
All right, so I know that you're doing interviews junket style today. I'm just wondering, how many interviews have you done so far?
I think you're number 4 for the day.
And how many more do you have after me?
I think I got 3 more. So we're midway through here, Jim.
And how are you feeling?
Feeling good.
Okay.
Feeling good.
All right. You're not like hitting
coffee,
a wall right
good.
Now. That would be tragic if you hit the wall with us.
No.
Okay, yeah, hit the wall for the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
So my first question is, how did you become interested in the brain?
So this actually started back in college because, I knew I was going to go to medical school and I was taking a variety of different courses and I took a neuroscience class and it was just amazing. You know, if you think about it, so much of the rest of the body almost feels like a machine, right? And I had a professor once who said, well, you could have an artificial hip, an artificial leg, an artificial knee. You could have an artificial heart, but they haven't made an artificial brain yet. And I had another friend who said, you can transplant everything else these days, but you can't transplant a brain. So the brain is just amazing as an organ. It's just amazing that it gives us life. It gives us personality and so many different ways. It ends up just defining who we are. So I always thought the brain was just the coolest thing.
The brain is the most important, right?
That's what we think.
Do you know Dr. Jay Mocco?
I do know Dr. Jay Mocco.
So I interviewed him last year, and he also agreed that the brain is the most important.
Yes.
All right. So next question is, what got you interested in advocating for stroke education?
So this is what we do, right? So I'm a neurointerventional radiologist and neurointerventional physicians like myself. What we do is we treat patients with neurologic disease. And one of the most common things that we treat are patients with stroke. You know, nowadays, the devices, the technology, our understanding of the field have evolved to where if a patient who's having what we call a large vessel occlusion stroke, so now this is a blockage of one of the major arteries supplying, say, one half of the brain or the other, right? If one of those patients comes in today to one of our level 1 comprehensive type stroke centers, our neurointerventional physicians can open up that blockage. However, what damage occurs from the time the stroke starts to when they arrive at the hospital, we can't reverse. All we're able to do is to prevent further damage, right? And so we realized that the biggest hurdle in many situations is getting the patient to the right hospital at the right time. Once they get there, our teams can take care of you, but you got to get there. And so we really realized that the bottleneck was public awareness, public understanding, and EMS.
So you talked about level one stroke center, and that's the place where you could get taken care of immediately. You've got the best facilities. You're in good hands.
That's right.
Not every hospital is a level one stroke center, correct?
That's correct. So level one stroke centers are also known as comprehensive stroke centers, are stroke centers that have specialized teams of doctors, nurses, technologists in all of the various subspecialties available 24/7, 365. In fact, we're required to have two teams on call every night. So if two patients came in exactly at the same time, we would still be able to provide that level of care.
Because that was my next question. Say if you had a stroke at 3 o'clock in the morning, could you still get the same type of help?
Yep. At a level one, at a comprehensive stroke center, we are required to be able to care for not one, but two of those patients, even at 3 in the morning at the same time.
And when I spoke with Dr. Mako last year, he said, what you should never do is drive to a hospital on your own, because when you call 911, that's when the pieces are put into place.
Absolutely. If there's one thing that we could say to make sure that all of your viewers and listeners understand, it is that they should absolutely call 911 if they have any of the signs or symptoms of a stroke. So we use the acronym BFAST. And B is for balance. You lose your balance. You're not as steady on your feet. I is for eyes. You have blurry vision or loss of vision. Especially it affects one eye or one side of one eye. F is for face. You can have drooping of one side of your face. A is for arm. One of your arms might be falling down, might not be as strong. You kind of lose strength in the arm. And S is for speech. You may not be articulating as correctly. You may have be slurring your words, or you could have difficulty finding the right words. If any of those things happens, the T is for time. It's time to call 911. Because really, calling 911 and letting the EMS professionals arrive and do their thing is the most important thing people can do.
So I was reading up on this, and it said that every minute you go untreated after having a stroke, 2 million brain cells die. So on average, do you know how long it takes someone to go from home to hospital?
So it depends. You know, it depends on where you are. It depends on, you know, if you're in a metropolitan area, if you're in a suburban area, rural area. You know, we've done some research here in Rhode Island where I practice, and we've looked at how long it takes. And on average, now we're a pretty densely populated area, but not, you know, a super metropolis. Our patients spend an average of about 8 to 9 minutes in ambulance. It's not a lot. There are other places where patients may be more distant. And that 2 million neurons a minute is sort of a general guide. There are some patients who are on lose a little bit less and other patients who may be accelerating their damage.
So you said 8 to 9 minutes for an ambulance to get to somebody's house?
No. Well, in Rhode Island, it's probably less than that to get to the house. That's from the time they pack up the patient and get in the truck and start driving to arrive at the hospital.
And then when they're in the ambulance, are they being treated?
Absolutely. So there's a variety of things that the EMTs do when they first arrive on the scene. One of the things that they will do is they will check the blood pressure and they'll also check the blood glucose. Patients with diabetes whose sugars are either too low or too high can have symptoms that look very much like a stroke. That's something that often can be treated right on the scene and help stabilize the patient. The EMTs are also making sure the patients are able to breathe safely on their own and that they don't need any assistance or oxygen to help supplement them. And then as soon as the EMTs feel the patient stable, they will put them in the ambulance and drive them to the hospital.
So every hospital doesn't have a level one stroke center, correct?
That's correct.
If you feel like you're at a higher chance of getting a stroke, maybe you had a family member who had a stroke, or maybe you had a stroke and you're worried about that second stroke, should you check to always make sure you know where the closest level one stroke center is?
So that's always helpful to know where the comprehensive stroke centers are in your area and know what's the closest hospital to you and what's the closest comprehensive stroke center. But, you know, another question I often get asked is, what can I do to prevent a stroke, right? And, you know, we've talked a lot about 911 and calling 911, and certainly that's really important. But from a standpoint of prevention, you know, the big risk factors are cigarette smoking, uncontrolled diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. And recently, we've understand the importance of physical activity as well as diet. So those are sort of the things that we can all do to sort of minimize our risk of stroke.
But should you know where a level one stroke center is? Or if you have a stroke, you call 911 and you let the medical profession take care of the rest?
So the answer to that is both yes. So you should know, but you should call 911. And what the Get Ahead of Stroke campaign is trying to do is to identify areas where we can change triage protocols. If someone's having minor symptoms, the likelihood that they're having a large vessel occlusion stroke is fairly low. Those patients can go to a level two or primary stroke center, get to the closest hospital, that's fine. What our campaign is trying to do is say, okay, if someone's having severe symptoms, they are likely going to need a comprehensive or level one stroke center. If there's one in close proximity, then the ambulance should take you there, even if it means a few extra minutes. And we've been successful over the past 9 years or so now. We're up to about just around half the states have some form of what we call a severity-based triage model, which is exactly this, where the EMTs will pick the patient up, they'll assess the patient at the scene and determine what is the most appropriate hospital for this patient. Is it the closest hospital, which may be a level two or primary stroke center? Or if they're having severe symptoms, should I drive a little extra and go to a comprehensive or level one stroke center?
So Dr. Jayaraman, in your typical day-to-day, do you work with a lot of stroke patients?
We treat a lot of stroke. That's one of the most common things that we deal with, whether it's stroke from a blockage of blood flow to the brain or an ischemic stroke, which is the most common. It's about 90%. We also treat patients with hemorrhagic stroke that's bleeding into or on the surface of the brain. That's about 10%. The majority of stroke is ischemic stroke.
So when you get that call, can you take me through it? What goes through your mind? How do you prepare? How do you get into action?
Right. So I'm blessed to work with an amazing team. Our team of nurses, technologists, nurse practitioners, and PAs, our student physicians who are learning how to do these procedures, our entire team is blessed. And so typically I'll get a call that there's a patient we suspect is having a large vessel occlusion stroke. We now have smartphone apps that allow us to securely view the images on our phone. So I may be at a kid's basketball game, I may be out to dinner, wherever. I'll look at the images on the phone, and if indeed the patient is a candidate based on the information that I have, then I can send out a secure message from my phone to activate the team. Everyone's required to live within a 30-minute radius of the hospital, so everyone comes right in. And so our techs, nurses are there. And in my mind, as I'm driving in, I've usually reviewed the scan. I'm thinking about what equipment I'm going to use. I'm thinking about what unanticipated consequences I've seen in a patient with this type of anatomy over the years, sort of preparing myself mentally for the case. But again, it's like watching a NASCAR pit crew. Everybody's got their job. Everybody does their job. And between our nurses, techs, nurse practitioners, and PAs, everyone just does an amazing job.
So by the time the patient comes in, you already got your game plan figured out?
By the time I come in, if I've seen the imaging, I have my game plan. I have sort of option A, B, and C picked out in my mind.
And I was reading today about a thrombectomy. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Thrombectomy.
Can you take me through that?
Yeah, that's the procedure I'm talking about. So basically what we're trying to do is, in most of the ischemic strokes, the clot that's causing the blockage has traveled to that spot in the brain from somewhere else, right? It may have come from the heart. It may have come from another blockage in the artery in the neck. And so what we do is first we go into either the artery in the leg or the artery in the wrist. And from there, we have catheters, small hollow plastic tubes that are flexible. And we navigate them up to close to the blockage. We check and confirm that the artery is still blocked. And then we have a variety of different types of tools. Some of them are little snare-type devices or stent-type devices. We call them a stent retriever to grab the clot. Others are catheters that are connected to suction, and we can suck out the clot. Sometimes we use a combination of those devices to either grab the clot or suck the clot out and open up the blood flow.
And at what part of the body does that enter? You have me fascinated right now.
Yeah. So we go in the artery to the leg or the artery to the wrist. And since all the blood vessels are connected, we can travel within the blood vessels all the way up to the arteries to the brain.
So it snakes up through the blood vessels?
Yep. That's what we do.
Wow. I'm speechless right now. I'm speechless. So when you, how do you, you stick it in the blood vessel. Yep. And then is there any type of controlling that you do, like with a joystick?
So we have an ability to steer the devices. So you can essentially, you know, turn left here, turn right there, turn left here, turn right there, and kind of steer our way up. You know, in a lot of these patients, I've already had a CAT scan that specifically looked at the blood vessel. So I kind of know the road ahead based on the scan. And that's what I was talking about, thinking about planning it out while I'm driving in my mind. But we've seen, you know, the anatomy ahead of time to some extent, but there's always sometimes something unexpected while you're doing the procedure.
Because, you know, the average layperson probably thinks you go straight through the skull.
Yes, yes. No, it's similar to when patients have a heart attack and they have to put a stent in. And they usually go in the artery to the wrist or the leg, and they go to where the blockage is. We do the same thing. And it's a similar time frame. Sometimes we can be doing these procedures and complete in 15, 20 minutes.
And I saw a video of you online today, and you were talking about seeing a patient the next day. And when you act fast, you can see the difference. So can you take me through that, when a patient comes in and then seeing them the next day after they get the procedure?
It is the most rewarding feeling in medicine, frankly, of all the types of patients I treat. When you see someone come in, imagine someone unable to move one side of their body, unable to speak, unable to understand what you're saying to them. That patient, without what our team is able to do, is destined for a really poor quality of life, if you think about that. Sometimes it's the next day. We've had patients improve on the table.
Wow.
I'll never forget, we had a patient that we treated. It was a gentleman who was on a golf course, and he collapsed on the golf course. And his buddies that he was on the golf course with called 911. Our EMS protocols here allowed him to come directly to our center. We had been alerted by EMS that this likely large vessel occlusion stroke patient was on the way in. We did the CAT scan, and it showed, sure enough, a blockage in the artery that went to the left side of the brain. And we did the procedure. And as soon as we did the procedure, we pulled out the clot and we were getting ready to close up. And, you know, our patients for a lot of these procedures are sedated, but they're not under full anesthesia at our center. And we heard the patient say, "Excuse me, can I say something?" And everyone in the room kind of just fell silent. And he's like, "I can speak now."
Wow.
And once you experience something like that, so it's unbelievably rewarding when you see it the next day. It's even more amazing when you see them on the table. It's not, you know, a lot of patients need a day or so to recover, but occasionally you'll get that patient that improves on the table on the way out the door, and it's just an amazing feeling.
So before you go, Dr. Jayaraman, to your next interview, I believe number 5 of the day.
That's right.
What do you do for fun?
Well, I enjoy traveling with my kids and my wife. We like to go to national parks. We like to hike. We like to be outdoors. We enjoy those types of activities.
Do you have a favorite band or type of music?
Oh, this is good. So I would have to say probably either 90s grunge, sort of in the Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots era, or like 80s, 90s alternative rock.
Oh my goodness. We can be friends. We can hang out. All right. Last question. And I've always wondered this. Does your family ever get annoyed when you get that call? Or do they understand that's what you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. My family is incredibly understanding. They know that's what I do. They've lived with it. My kids have grown up with us. Whenever I'm on call, we take 2 cars to every event, every basketball game, soccer game, out to dinner with friends. Or if they say, "We want to go here," and they know, "Oh, Dad's on call, that's too far." You know, I feel badly for my kids because I've probably missed events, and I, you know, feel badly for my wife because she's carried sort of an unfair burden a lot of the time. But I think they fully understand the reason why. I mean, my kids are older now, so they know what Dad's going in for.
Dad's a lifesaver. That's what you do. They know that.
Yes.
Dr. Jayaraman, thank you so much for the time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for spreading the message. Have a great day.
So for Dr. Mahesh Jayaraman, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see Jens later.